I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer online one-on-one sessions, packages, and online courses for the conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me, and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Rebecca. Rebecca is a mama of two from Bristol, UK. She's a civil servant working in forestry as well as a yoga and hypnobirthing teacher, a profession she stepped into after the birth of her first. Her first birth was a planned home birth that didn't go the way she hoped, which we will dive into in the beginning of this episode before we continue on with the birth that she just had only weeks ago with her baby Scout. She birthed him at home, attended by an unusually big crowd of paramedics, her doula, and her midwives who all showed up just in time for the birth of her baby. A natural birth that Rebecca describes as very healing. She was so gracious in sharing her pearls of wisdom on how to prepare for the birth you want. Curious about Rebecca? Find her on Instagram as Rebecca Naylor. Are you planning on having a physiological natural birth? Did you know I have lots of resources that are free, like my home birth checklist and my ebook on all the routine hospital birth procedures that can help you write a birth plan for any birth scenario, just to name a few of those resources. Find all of them via the link in my bio. I've got an announcement to make. I've decided to partner with a beautiful woman-owned leading women's health supplement brand called Needed. And I have not taken this decision on having a sponsor lightly. I've grilled them, you guys, and they passed. I've been watching Needed for over 2 years now. I've tested out their products myself, done my own research, and I've spoken to their people about the quality and the bioavailability of their products. Because let's face it, most prenatals on the market are just expensive pee that include bare minimum nutrition. Needed's products offer the forms of nutrients to your body that your body can actually use, those that optimal versus bare minimal levels, designed by women's health experts that actually test nutrient levels based on the latest research. And I love that Needed was founded by two mamas who were shocked to realize that 95% of women who actually take a prenatal vitamin have nutrient deficiencies. So if you want to optimize your health and your baby's health, then I invite you to pop on over to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes to check out the wide range of supplements that they offer. And if you choose to test out their products, you can use the code THENATURALBIRTHPODCAST in capital letters for 20% off your first month. That's THENATURALBIRTHPODCAST in capital letters for 20% off your first month.
Hi, Rebecca, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
Hi. Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here, Anna. I listen to your podcast pretty much every day of my pregnancy, and I just really wanted to share my journey as well with all of your listeners.
Amazing. I love that. I love that so many mamas who now have listened for maybe 1 or 2 years are now coming on the podcast. There's so many that have been avid listeners that now share their stories. And it really goes to show the power of storytelling and yeah. how that really can program the subconscious mind and just be such an anchor, such a support in your journey of preparation. And even in labor, like remembering some things that people have shared as you.
I definitely did. I remember, I think your last guest was Ellen Fisher, before I went into labor. And I'd already watched her YouTube birth videos. And yeah, I actually found some of the pearls of wisdom that she shared really came back to me during labor. And yeah, we can talk about some of those when we get to the juicy bits.
Well, I love that. That is just, it fills my heart with so much joy knowing that it aids and helps women in birth. So thank you for sharing that. So yes, let's dive on in. So before we get to your birth that was pretty recent, you actually birthed a baby, was it 9 years ago now?
Yeah, so my son Jasper is 9 years old. We had planned a home birth. I felt like I'd done a little bit of preparation. You know, we've been to home birth groups in Bristol in the UK where I'm at, and felt like it was something that was really for us. I have always had a little bit of fear around the medical profession. I'm needle phobic, which... it seems crazy when you've had two babies to still be scared of needles, but I think I wanted to be as far away from a kind of medicalized environment as possible. So yeah, I felt like we'd done some of the homework, but I think after Jasper's birth, I realized actually there was a lot more prep that I could have done. And actually, yeah, I think having a lot of other wise women around me as well really helped this time around, which I didn't have with my first birth with Jasper. So we ended up transferring to hospital after we were at home for 2 days laboring, and we had the home birth team out with us for 12 hours. So it was a really, really long labor. I got to about 7 centimeters, and our midwife suggested breaking my waters, which really escalated the interventions, and we ended up transferring and having a forceps delivery with episiotomy, epidural, syntocinin, all of the drugs. And it really impacted my postpartum recovery. Even though I was, you know, fit and healthy, 10 years younger than I am now, I think, yeah, just I didn't get that natural high that you get with a physiological natural birth. And I think that definitely, you know, it meant I had delayed milk production. You know, my milk came in a bit slower when I got home, very tearful, things like that. So yeah, I knew coming into this birth that we were definitely going to try for a home birth again, but I knew I needed to do a lot more prep and a lot more homework, knowing my rights. When people suggest things helpfully, knowing that there is an alternative and also understanding where they might be coming from.
Yeah, so, definitely. I so hear what you're saying. And it is hard to know your first time around, like what you don't know and what you know yet you need to know. And it is hard. It's not easy to know that. Yeah. It's so easy to be, you know, clever in hindsight to go, oh yeah, I didn't know all of these things. But you just didn't know the first time.
No. And, you know, I feel like there is a culture with medical profession that they don't know if you can bear. And they, because of that, they are much more cautious with first-time mums and don't like to let them labor for too long from birth stories I've heard from friends and my doula, that does seem to happen. You know, for second-time mums, the statistics say are more likely to get that home birth. First-time mums are more likely to transfer, and I don't always think it's for medical emergencies. And coming into this birth, I was really clear in my birth plan that I didn't consider maternal fatigue as a medical emergency to transfer, because that was the thing that ended up being recorded as the reason I transferred.
And that is the most common reason why you transfer. You know, it's not that first time moms can't birth at home or vaginally or without assistance. It's that sometimes, like you heard in Ellen's story, right, that sometimes it just it does on all levels take longer sometimes for first time mom to get to a point where she pushes her baby out. It might be a mental block, it might be a emotional block, it might be a physical one too, like opening the channel the first time, it usually is a longer process. And like transferring from home to hospital is usually done not because of an emergency. Very rarely it is done because of maternal fatigue.
And I think, like, absolutely, if a mother wants to transfer because they've done a really long labor and they're like, you know what, it's time for the drugs and I need a rest to go into this next chapter of my life, and I can't spend everything I've got, I need support, that's absolutely the right thing to do. I think it's where there's coercion, because maybe they feel like you're taking too long.
Exactly that. When it comes from the outside, if a mother wants to, that's a totally different thing. Totally different. But it is like you say, it's when it comes from the midwife or the care provider, or thinking that you're not progressing at a certain pace that you should or whatever.
That phrase as well that gets handed around, failure to progress.
Definitely not supporting you.
Just one thing I've learned from listening to all of the, listening to your podcast and listening to all those stories.
So what do you feel was your biggest takeaway from this birth experience that you had the first time that you then took into when you felt pregnant again?
There's a couple. I think the biggest one was needed to process that birth, what I felt was traumatic about that birth, and work through that, surround myself with birth keepers. So I had quite a few different women in various roles supporting my second birth, or the one that we're going to talk about, and doing my homework and really understanding what intervention was and what intervention looked like. And I think I went overboard with my homework, and I actually did a hypnobirth teacher training course with Catherine Graves. So I doubled down and felt like I really did my prep even before conception, and I knew that if I even wanted to conceive, that I probably did have to process that trauma.
Yeah, love that. You don't have to do obviously a hypnobirthing teacher training, but I love that you really understood the need for, for the healing and the processing, even before conceiving again. I love that. So when you conceived, I'm guessing it was quite conscious that it was longing.
So we actually took about 10 months from starting to try to scout conceiving Scout, but we had a miscarriage about 3 months into trying. It was a really early miscarriage, but that kind of put us, that I guess that was our first test really, because that put us into the, yeah, the medical world again. And it was, in a way, reaffirmed my desire to distance myself, I guess, from hospitals and yeah, their perceptions of risk and yeah, how you're treated in hospital, basically.
All right. Well, that's beautiful. So let's dive on into your birth story. So this time around, did you choose to have independent midwives or did you go through the NHS?
Yeah. I really tried to get an independent midwife. There's only one that works within a distance from where I live. And she was actually on maternity leave. So yeah, I know. We actually had a family friend. She's a bit of an institution in Bristol, Sue Lerner, who was a practicing independent midwife. But because the insurance just became extortionate for independent midwives, they were kind of pushed out and they're not able to operate. It's financially just crippling for them. So we went down the NHS route and we, you know, had community midwives. I knew I wanted to have a doula because I wanted my birth partner to be able to be in the experience and birth with me and not have to be in his rational brain and having to do, you know, all of the admin side of things that happens when you have a home birth. So yeah, we had a doula. We had a hypnobirth teacher. We had another doula who was looking after us postpartum as well in terms of placenta encapsulation. And I also have a lovely yoga teacher who was doing pregnancy massage with me in the run-up and also helping my partner to kind of do body work as well. So I felt like I had a really lovely group of women around us. And yeah, our family friend Sue Lerner was, you know, on the phone and available to us whenever we wanted any kind of advice on the system. But yeah, that was kind of, we kind of, as soon as we were pregnant, we kind of gathered those people around us. I made sure we had the support. And I was actually really happy with our NHS midwives in the run-up. I had one that I saw maybe three times, which is unheard of that you get the same midwife at, you know, pretty much every appointment. So I felt comfortable. Unfortunately, she, you know, she told us it's very unlikely I'm going to be there for the birth, which kind of, yeah, put a dampener on things slightly. But as it transpired, yeah, unfortunately, we had a spoiler alert. The midwives told us they weren't coming to our home birth at all when we were quite far progressed, when we were quite far into it. So, yeah, I feel like I'm so pleased that we have a free healthcare system and it is, you know, the envy of the world. But unfortunately, a lot of disinvestment over the last 10, 15 years has meant that, you know, it's that care for women is being eroded. But luckily, we did have our doula and she was amazing and supported us through that journey. All through labor. And made the home birth possible, I think.
Beautiful. So let's dive on in. Tell us about the early signs of labor approaching for you.
Well, a Thursday night, I would say, yeah, in the early hours, I was having regular contractions. What I thought were regular and that I thought this could be it. And it was kind of every 15 minutes and I was kind of sounding through them, but staying pretty much asleep, but they never got closer together and they never increased in intensity. So Friday morning felt tired, I was feeling a bit deflated, but then just thought, you know what, we've got to change things up, like this could be the start and that's just my body prepping and that is the start, and we've just got to stay positive and let's do all of the things that, you know, we've said that we're going to do in preparation. So We had lovely walk in the sunshine on Friday morning. We had some nice food for lunch. We had snuggles on the bed. And actually, whilst we were snuggling on the bed, me and my partner, contractions started coming back. But I kind of, they were so mild. I really felt like they could have been, you know, prodromal labor or Braxton Hicks. And so I was like, right, let's change things up and see if this goes anywhere else. And Sarah put on some 80s anthems, got in the kitchen, yeah, was dancing around. I'd lost my mucus plug about 3 or 4 days earlier, but obviously knew that that could also come back and grow back, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's a day or two away. So as I was dancing, I felt very like moist down below, and I went to the toilet and wiped, and it was very mucusy, bloody show. Really, I was so surprised because I'd not really had that much with Jasper of blood. So took a picture, sent it to my doula. My doula said, yeah, that looks great, awesome. Carried on dancing, and I was like, wow, I keep wiping and it keeps coming, and gosh, like, that's like, yeah, this is working. Okay. So I was still having, you know, contractions, but they were fairly far apart. And I just thought, okay, I don't know how long this is going to be. I had a really long labor the first time around. It's important to also have some rest. You can't dance for 3 hours and then bed, maybe. So I had a bit of time on the sofa just watching. Yeah. Just watching some programs while my partner was cooking. And I kept having to pause because I kept missing bits of my program. And I suddenly was like, I've paused this like 5 times now. So I think we're on. And I went into the kitchen and said, I think you should fill the pool. And he was like, what? Mm-hmm. I just made dinner. My dinner's ready. I said, I don't think we're going to be having dinner somehow. And yeah, from that point onwards, the contractions increased in intensity. They got longer, stronger, and closer together. I got in the pool and it was amazing. But I was still quite in my, I wasn't fully in the birth space yet, because my partner said, shall I get Jess, our doula, to come out? And I said, oh, I still feel quite self-conscious, and I feel a bit almost embarrassed that I'm having to sound through these contractions, and we're miles away from having a baby. So I sort of kind of put him off calling that her, even though he really wanted to. And I said, let's just see how we get on for a bit longer. So we waited about an hour, and that was, yeah, so we contractions and things started coming back and bloody show about 2 p.m. and then my doula finally came out about 6 p.m. and she felt from the noises that I was making and how the waves were, yeah, coming in and how close together they were, that she felt fairly confident. You know, she said, can't put a figure on this, but you know, it could be an hour, it could be 4 hours, but you know, it's all happening how it's supposed to happen. And then for me, the contractions changed. So whilst I was doing my hypnobirthing teach training, I didn't really understand the up breathing and the down breathing, because I'd never really experienced that with my first birth with Jasper, because I'd not got to the pushing stage with him before I had an epidural. And so the contractions that were kind of coming up didn't feel productive. I can't, you know, sugarcoat it, but they were painful, but I didn't feel like they were doing anything. Of course they were, but suddenly there was a gear change and it was like, okay, this is productive. And I can really feel a downward movement to these contractions now. I really feel like every contraction is doing something, and my noises changed, and I suddenly really went inward. I didn't, yeah, I was no longer bothered who was in the room. I just felt like primal, I felt really primal at that point. And it was satisfying as well. I think one thing I want to say to, first-time mums is that you might be scared by the pain that you feel in those early contractions, thinking that it's only going one way, which is it's only going to increase. I don't think that's always the case. I don't think that's everyone's experience. I think I found those contractions to be easier to cope with because I really felt like they were doing something and it felt productive.
Calling you the mystics, mothers, maidens, and magas, the nurturers, healers, birth workers, midwives, doulas, and nurses, the seers and visionaries, shamans and changemakers, and you, the rebel ones. You who recognize birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring and safeguarding. You who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space. Here is your invitation to apply for the Spiritual Midwife Mentorship Program starting in September. A full year's container of learning, embodying, and deepening into a true space holder and sacred advocate for a woman's rite of passage of birth. By weaving ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth skills, and the art of sacred space holding, this program is unique to its kind as it also offers transformational one-on-one mentoring with me, personally assisting you in becoming the clear channel and the best space holder that you can be. You will be held, nurtured, and supported for a whole year inside our worldwide spiritual midwife community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. This mentorship program is for you who feel a deep calling to serve as the custodian of the sacred at the birth altar, whose intuition is ringing clear as you receive this invitation. Find out more and apply at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
Yeah, so then my doula said, let's phone the midwives. And again, I just thought, I'm miles away from having a baby. I don't want them to come out and interrupt this. But her and my partner are like, look, they don't have to come out, but we really should let them know that you need to be on their radar, basically. I said, okay, but don't ask them to come out until I feel ready for them to come out. And I really did want them there for the reasons which I'll chat about, but you know, I wanted to have that I didn't want a free birth. I'd done my research on that and I wasn't comfortable with that level of responsibility. I wanted to have resus equipment there. I wanted to have midwives there for the baby, and also so that if there were tears, I could have that at home and I wouldn't have to go into hospital. I could just stay here. I didn't want to like have my baby at home and then have to transfer for, you know, blood loss or something like that. I wanted to be able to stay home. So my doula called the midwives and they could hear me and they said, okay, we think we should send somebody. And at that point I said, okay, fine, you can send them, because you know they're not going to be here in 3 minutes. And they said, we'll be here in 20 minutes, half an hour. That time passed and then I was coping really well. I felt I was coping really well. Everything felt intense, but it was really manageable. And my partner had some hands-on pressure just on my sacrum, but I wouldn't describe it as counter pressure. It was almost just a hand. And I felt like that, you know, kind of if your child hurts themselves and you kiss their knee really quickly, or you kiss the thing that hurt, and that seems to soothe them. It was like that. I felt like it was just stopping the pain signals from going quite so quickly to my brain. So that was really supportive. My doula came in. She had these phone calls outside with the midwives, which I'm really grateful for. And this is one of the reasons I would say everyone should have a doula, is because, yeah, my partner didn't have to deal with any of that and could just solely be there for me. And also for him as well, you know, he did not want to be leaving me at that point. Mm. So she came in and she said, "I'm really sorry. I'm so, so sorry. We've heard the midwives aren't going to be sending anybody out to your home birth." And I didn't really register it. I just thought, that's okay. I've got ages. I'm not going to give birth in the next hour. That's fine. They can get here whenever. And she said, no, they're not. They're not going to be sending anybody. We've got a few options. You can stay here and free birth. And my partner said, yep, we'll do that. We'll do that. And I said, Jamie, no, I don't want to make the decision to free birth in labor. If it happens by accident, that's one thing. Hmm. But I'm not choosing that at this point. The other option was transfer in the car. But my doula just said, I don't think we'll get to hospital in time. And, you know, it's actually not any safer to give birth in your car en route than it is to stay at home.
It's probably safer at home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I just didn't think Jamie was in any fit state to be driving across town. And also I have to say, parking is a nightmare in Bristol, an absolute nightmare. So just, yeah, we definitely weren't choosing that option. The other option was we can phone paramedics and you can transfer. And that was actually what the midwives wanted to do. And they'd said to Jess, we strongly advise her to do this. And they actually used the words, which I only obviously found this out later, but they used the words, this is a medical emergency now. And they wanted Jess to relay to me the risks of me staying at home without any midwives. And Jess put her foot down and said, I'm not going to do that. I will present to her options. I will ring you back and let you know what she decides. So the other option that Jess floated was, we can hold off. We don't have to do anything right now. We can tactically call the paramedics so that they're not going to try and transfer you. They'll just stay. And they have all of the resus equipment that you want and that you will. I basically said to her, I don't feel safe without having any medical assistance here should we need it. And she said, well, in that case, you know, I don't think free birth's the thing for you, because you probably won't. You will resist pushing and it will be painful and traumatic. So we went with the option of, let's tactically call the paramedics. And we looked out. We got an amazing paramedics out. One guy who'd never seen our home birth. I think he was 25. Unfortunately, he was stationed. At this point, they asked me to get out of the pool. God knows why, because I was doing great in there. I got out of the pool and I got on all fours. He was stationed down the business end. I did a poo. Which later got trodden around my kitchen.
Oh no.
Yeah. So one of the paramedics in their huge steel toe capped boots had stood in it. Thankfully I didn't see any of this. So that was fine. Yeah, that was all cleared away. Yeah. And we had one paramedic who, she had obviously been in the job for a really long time, seen lots of born before arrival kind of home births and people that weren't planning home births but accidentally had their babies at home, and she'd also had two children herself, so she was really comfortable with birth, and she could see that everything was progressing really nicely. And she said, yeah, and luckily they were at the end of their shift, so they were quite happy to hang around and stay and weren't in a rush to try and transfer me, because, you know, their job at the end of the day isn't to stay with patients in their home. Their job is to take them from one place to another safely. But they were really kind and said, okay, you know, you can, you're going to have your baby at home. And then everyone was like, get back in the pool. Jess and Jamie were saying, I was like thinking it's all like, even though I was, you know, in this primal state, I also did have a lot of emotion come up about from my last birth and thinking, oh, it's all happening again. It's, you know, just having ambulance crew there, it couldn't help but some of that, you know, come back into me and come back up for me. And yeah, Jess and my partner did an amazing job. My partner, I just could not have done it without him. He was amazing. They brought me back into it, got me back in the water, got the lights down, got my music playlist back on. And from that point onwards was amazing. I was like, it's on. This is on. You know, when you talk about, and you've talked about it quite a lot on your podcast, stepping through the portal and surrendering. It was really at that point that I just felt safe. I felt powerful. I felt I've made this decision. I could have gone to hospital and I've decided to stay and we're doing it. And yeah, even though contractions were really intense, it was so gratifying. I could really feel her coming down, up, down, up, down, up, with each contraction. And then, yeah, I think one of the things that I worked through as well with my doula was the ring of fire, because with Jasper, I had an episiotomy. So I never, even though they'd let the epidural kind of wear off so that I could feel contractions and start to push, I had never felt that ring of fire. And I was scared what that sensation might be like. And I just have to say that it was like I was observing it, but it wasn't consuming me at all. Mm. It was like I was just observing myself stretching and I could feel myself stretching. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. It can't stretch any further. Oh, but it is. Wow. And yeah, really did. I don't think ring of fire was the right words for it. It just felt like, you know, if you do yoga and you're stretching your muscles and you're kind of at your edge. Mm. And if you can either relax into it and breathe and then, and just notice the sensation and observe the sensation and relax into it, or you can tighten and you're fighting it. And in your mind, you're going, okay, I want to get out of this position. I want to get out of this position. Mm. I chose the former and I just noticed and observed, and it just happens without you doing anything at all. Mm. You can't just observe it and you don't need to fight it or think about it or do anything. You don't need to do anything. You just have to be there and be with it.
Yeah, so true. And it's so important also for that stretch to happen, like for the head to do that turtling of going in and out, in and out. That's what stretches you so beautifully and prevents tearing, right?
Yeah. And I mean, her head did come out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. She was born fairly quick. So you actually didn't know the sex, the gender at this point. I was convinced we were having a boy. So yeah, it was a lovely surprise. We were just like, what? I had to look twice. So yeah, her head came out, and at that point there's a knock at the door and it was the midwives. So the midwives came in, and there was a bit of tension in the room, I'm told, by my partner and Jess. I really wasn't, I didn't care at that point, but there's a bit of tension because I think the paramedic, bless her, you know, she's not a birth worker. And she had said, okay, next purse, shoulders out. And the midwives went, no. And I actually was like thinking, I'm not going to be following anybody's instructions.
That's it.
This is going to happen on its own how it happens.
Yeah.
And the next two contractions were like mini contractions. It was like my body was saying, yeah, we don't want the rest of your baby to just whoosh out. So we're going to give you two not so intense ones. It felt like they went full. So it was, I was pushing down, but then it kind of ended before it was like expelling. And then, on the third, I think the third contraction after her head was out, her shoulders came out, her body came out, and she was in the water. Jamie, my partner, was facing me, and for some bizarre reason, I still thought that he was catching our baby, even though he was at my head end and I had my arms over him like this. And then I heard a noise in the room of, pick up your baby, pick up your baby. And I sort of looked between my legs, and her little face was floating between my legs, and I just picked her up and put her on my chest, and she was really purple, really, really purple, and she didn't breathe and cry straight away. And I just instinctually knew to put my, I just put my mouth over her nose and her mouth, and I sucked, and I got the biggest mouthful of stuff. I just spat that out into the pool, and then gave her a rub. And I think one of the midwives came in and just gave her a little rub with the towel. And then she suddenly pinked up and cried. And she's quite a decent size. She was an 8-pound-7 baby. And Jasper is the same, 8-pound-6. And actually, she was 8 days over her estimated due date, and Jasper was 9 days over her estimated due date. So I think I just cook them for longer, because they need that extra weight and that extra growing time.
You cook them perfectly. And you know what? A baby, each day a baby stays in the womb whenever the gestation, you know, because they will come when they're ready, when they are ready. That also gives them so much, not just that they put on weight, but they develop neurologically, their nervous system, everything. It's actually really essential that our babies get to stay as long as they want to and need to in our wombs. And that can be 37 weeks, and that can be 43 weeks, and all is well, all is good. It's exactly what that baby needs.
Yeah. I hate to circle back right to the beginning, but actually, like, before my 40 weeks, I was offered a stretch and sweet, and I was categorically absolutely not, because I had had stretch and sweeps with Jasper. I'd had two. The first one wasn't painful at all, and I thought, okay, that's fine. The second one, honestly, it was so painful. So I just knew with this pregnancy I wasn't going to have a stretch and sweep, and actually I didn't really feel ready to. I even though I took off maybe like two or three weeks before my estimated due date off work, I really didn't feel like I decompressed enough. I didn't feel ready. I really needed that extra 8 days to just settle into a routine of caring for myself, because I'd worked pretty hard, and it was quite an intense few weeks in the run-up to leaving work. So I'm glad that I got that extra time. I'm glad that, Scout got that extra time as well. I just definitely needed it. My doula was going, so she was born on the Friday. My doula was going on a hypnobirthing course that weekend and wasn't going to be around. So I do think part of my body is also saying, now would be a good time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't want to be left without that support. Now would be a good time.
Our subconscious knows, you know, it's
strong,
very
isn't it?
Clear, yeah.
Yeah. So then she was born and she was in our arms, and so proud of my partner, because the midwives and the paramedic were, what have you got? What have you got? My partner said, can you all just leave the room? We want to have this moment and take a minute for ourselves.
Brilliant.
Before we find out the gender. And you know what? It really, like, the gender just did not matter at all. At all. It was lovely to find out and lovely surprise, but you just, it's a baby. You've got a baby.
Yeah.
That was the magic. And we just wanted to be in that moment without suddenly having to intellectualize everything by, okay, it's a girl. All right. Baby Thornley, female. Let's, you know, just wanted that time for ourselves. And yeah, they were already as well on, even though, you know, I had my birth plan there and said I wanted a physiological third stage, they were already on me saying, do you want the injection now? Do you want to have your... I said, no, I'm going to birth my placenta. Unless we're here for 3 hours birthing this placenta, I'm going to birth the placenta. Because the drug last time actually made me really sick and I ended up having to have an antiemetic. Because that injection had made me sick, and it actually did delay me being able to breastfeed Jasper, because I was just throwing up every 5 minutes. But absolutely not. And it's like in two contractions, the placenta came out. And so I was holding her in the water. Jamie was next to me outside of the pool. And then the placenta came out, and Jamie cut the cord once he'd gone completely white. And we saved the placenta, we put that in the fridge. We knew we wanted capsules, but I hadn't thought at that point I would actually be able to eat my placenta raw. I just thought, I'm not going to be able to do that. Actually, when it came to it, I did, and I wanted to. It's bizarre how, once you see it and it's yours, and also once... because I'd had 2 iron infusions actually during the last stages of pregnancy, because I'd been really anemic and I just couldn't absorb the iron through my stomach, the iron tablets that they gave me. And the bleeding, the lochia, the postpartum bleeding, really left me feeling a bit weak on like day 2. So my partner went and got the placenta, and bless him, he filleted that placenta. After being a lifelong vegetarian, he was handling organ meat like a pro. and he cut that up for me. And over 2 days, I had that in smoothies. And I definitely noticed a difference. I really felt like my bleeding stemmed pretty, like within 24 hours of me having 2 smoothies. It seemed to feel like it was clotting really well. And then we had a lovely doula who came and took our placenta, my placenta, my baby's placenta, and encapsulated that. And I've had those capsules since Scout was born.
Beautiful.
And I did need 2 little stitches. And so it was great that the midwives showed up in the end, because I didn't want to have to transfer after having a lovely home birth. I didn't want to have to then transfer because I needed to have any medical checks or, you know, needed stitches. So it was great that they did show up in the end, because obviously the paramedics don't do any of that. They're just like, okay, great. Midwives are here. We're off. See ya. And so the midwives then had a look and they said, superficial, you don't have to have any stitches, but she did use the phrase, it's kind of a little horizontal tear across your labia, and your labia is kind of in 2 halves. And my partner heard that and he went, I think you should have the stitches. So he was scared that it was going to be malformed because of her words. What he didn't hear was, you know, this would probably knit back together by itself. But I had the 2 little stitches, and I was so, the natural high that you get is incredible. I didn't have any pain relief for that. Like, I didn't need to have any anesthetic. Wow. No, none. Yeah. It was, I was so, had so much hormones going around me that I just had my baby in my arms, you know, feeding her. Oh, the breast crawl as well. Wow. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't have that experience with Jasper because, you know, I was in a bed and he was passed to me where she was on my stomach, and, you know, after a few minutes she was crawled up me to get to the boob. So I just want to recommend to everybody to have a home birth, because the other thing was, when I was on all fours and the paramedics were here and we didn't know that they weren't going to insist that I go to hospital, you know, I did think in my mind, if I go to hospital, I'm going to have an epidural, because this has got that, it will have, I would have lost control over everything, and I don't want to be in pain, and I want to be in my right mind. Because, yeah, I felt like I would, if I'd have gone to hospital, I would have 100% had an epidural at that point, just to salvage some sense of control over things, I guess. So, yeah, I would say if you do want a natural physiological birth, then you're just more likely to get it at home.
That's very much true. That is evident by all the evidence of...
Yeah.
Yeah. The statistics of women birthing at home compared to hospital, and the, you know, the chance of having a really beautiful, physiological, challenging, amazing, natural birth. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now, who's about to have her first baby, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
I would say invest in a doula and other birth keepers. I think, yeah, not everybody has family living close by, or has, you know, I had my mum, I'm the eldest of seven children. My mum had seven children, but unfortunately she died 2 years ago. And, you know, your mum or your sisters aren't always the best people to support you, yeah, even in the postpartum period, or from somebody who can help you with everything from colic to co-sleeping, it's really invaluable. So I'd say, yeah, surround yourself with knowledgeable, wise women.
Beautiful. What a amazing story. What a beautiful outcome it was,
yeah,
for you, even though it all kind of tipped and turned and turned around a few times. Sounds like it was a really empowering experience.
Yeah, that's the other thing I would say, is that there are tips and turns in birth. You know, even in natural births and home births, there's always curveballs, and having, yeah, people to support you and tell you that you can do it.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.